your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to give Ryer on YouTube a like and a subscribe. Smash those buttons for Travis. Great content on Ryer on YouTube, including Talking Tide. We are here on a Sunday nighter, Travis, a feel-good Sunday nighter. Alabama coming off a 73-0 trouncing of Louisiana Monroe to improve to 1-1 on the season, with Wisconsin just ahead. Exactly what Alabama needed, Travis, and for the fans, if nothing else, it was a one night distraction from week one, right?
A sizable win, even though going in it felt like a no win situation for Kalen DeBoer and his team. As we talked about last week, really the only thing that could come out of that game Saturday night was more of a negative perspective of this 2025 unit, but give them credit. And you got to give them credit. Obviously, they had a good week of work. I thought it was interesting. I know we'll get into this, Kalen, in the post game talking about it. Basically, it sounds like everything was open back up for competition. Just about every spot. Maybe a few guys like Jeremy Bernard weren't in that type of situation, but that was interesting. But yeah, they did what they needed to do, and most importantly, they came out of it in pretty good health. I know you asked Kalen about that.
I did. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, most of the time in a game situation, injuries are obvious to the fans. You see somebody limp off. You see somebody need some medical attention. Not always. Sometimes a guy comes off the field with a separated shoulder or something, and if he's tough and doesn't flinch, you don't know it sometimes. And so I went ahead and asked DeBoer just to make sure they got out as healthy as it looked like. And it certainly sounds like that's exactly what happened. He said Ryan Williams, Tim Keenan, et cetera, decisions on those two and I guess some others pending probably midweek for Wisconsin.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because that was sort of unsolicited, you know, in terms of looking ahead to the next week and guys like Tim Keenan and Jam Miller. Now, I guess we'll see as we move throughout the week, but does it kind of tell you that those guys are maybe nearer to getting back into the thing than they are still 2 or 3 weeks away?
I think it does. I wouldn't be surprised to see at least one of those two aforementioned, Williams and Keenan, on the field against Wisconsin. Jam Miller, I got less of a feel for. We'll see what happens with that upper body injury of his. Collarbone, sounds like, of course, reportedly. But you know what? As good as Kevin Riley looked, and you know, we're going to use that "remember it's ULM" caveat, I'm sure, a couple times here on the podcast. But setting that aside, I thought Kevin Riley looked pretty darn good. And by the way, he looked good against Florida State too.
And that's why you felt like he was deserving of the opportunity he got to open the game against ULM, because he did look good against a Florida State team that we're still sort of trying to figure out exactly how good Florida State is. I know they put a 70 burger on East Texas A&M. And I do think as long as Castellano stays healthy, that team can win 8-9, who knows how many games perhaps. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for Riley, it's like you learn a little bit more about that guy every week. Against Florida State, it was more about he showed you some good lean and some instinctive nature in terms of between the tackle runs, especially. But then I thought against ULM the other night, he showed you he can catch it consistently out of the backfield. And he showed a little bit of that against Florida State. but it was pretty extensive against the Warhawks.
Yeah, six catches. Not all of them placed perfectly. I know one ball was kind of thrown behind him down on the sideline. He made a nice adjustment on that ball. Really good game for him. 69 rushing yards, I believe, and 45 receiving on six catches. 17 total touches for the Tuscaloosa native, Travis. And what about Ty Simpson, 17 for 17? Pretty sharp performance from him.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about prestigious company. That will do it for you. Even, and you can say, well, again, ULM. But we saw Tua against teams like ULM, you know, not do those type of things. Or some of the greatest quarterbacks of the modern era haven't been able to do that sort of thing. So, sounds like, again, Kalen in the post-game remarks, he viewed last week as a competition continuing at the quarterback position, not just for the 2-3 spot, which we were so focused on really throughout preseason practices, but he was really good. You know, he was more comfortable, which you would expect. Again, you're playing at home. You're not on the road. The competition certainly isn't what Florida State threw at you. But it also, I think, speaks to how valuable that first start could be for him, maybe moving forward. Maybe this is exactly more the kind of Ty Simpson we're going to see moving forward.
He was confident. There's no doubt about it. Spread the ball all over the place. Lots of players on the field. We'll get into that a little bit later. In terms of the bench, I mean, it's easier to ask who didn't play than who did. That's how much the bench got emptied in this one. But let's go ahead and exhaust the quarterback talk. Austin Mack comes in for a second quarter series. Travis, to you, is that a clear enough indication that he won that number two job, which, of course, Kalen DeBoer never declared?
I think it does, because it sounds like they had scripted that first series for him into the game plan. That wasn't right. We're up big, and so we'll go ahead and get him in the game.
Right.
That felt like it was zip-zip early in the second quarter, that was going to be Austin Mack's series. I don't think that was a situation they obviously had in mind for Keelan Russell, who looked great, but that was going to be more along the lines of, okay, we've got this thing in command. We'll go ahead and play our true freshman, Keelan Russell. So, yeah, I mean, that, again, felt like that going into last week, not entirely opened things back up, but I think also Austin Mack is more about what they want Ty Simpson to be. I think they like Ty Simpson's mobility, but hearing from Ryan Grubb after Florida State and talking about, well, if our quarterback's running it as much as he did, that's probably not going to be good for our offense. Now, there's other things that go into that. He's getting pressure, things like that. But I think the message to Ty was, we want you to stand in there and deliver the football first and foremost in this offense.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know what? If we're going to nitpick a little bit on Simpson, and I can go back to week one, so maybe it's not so much of a nitpick. One thing I'm seeing early from him that's a little concerning is when he peels out of the pocket, Travis, he can give up a ton of ground. I mean, he almost goes backwards for 5 yards before he even starts going laterally. And that's a dangerous thing. Because when you get into conference play and some of those edge rushers are faster than you are, that's how you see sacks go from -7 to -17.
Yeah, and that's a problem in terms of sometimes if you spin out of pockets, you know, and you become predictable with that. I've seen a guy like Trevor Lawrence do it for the last few years with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and it's been very problematic for him. But, yeah, you still want to see him, if he can, step up into the pocket, you know, and keep the eyes up the field. I think even against ULM, there was a time where he dropped his eyes, got him back up, and was still able to make a throw. And you'd like him to keep those eyes up a little bit longer and navigate that pocket. I said this after the Florida State game. I still don't see him as a true dual threat. I know he can run, and I know he can pass, but I don't think he's dynamic to the point of extending plays in a way like you outlined. You know, there's some guys that are true dual threats that in terms of technique and what you coach them to do, they can kind of go against that and still make it work. But I think to your point, I don't think Ty Simpson's truly that kind of guy. A good athlete, good, really yeah. good at, plus athlete. Yeah. But to the extent that, you know, to do some of the things that you're talking about, that's probably not.
Is he going
to
be out? Is he going to be able to outrun like a Dylan Stewart on a, in a situation like that? Maybe not.
Harold Perkins.
Right.
You know, yeah. Some of these he'll go guys. Get him. Yeah. I mean, so. and you're putting it on tape. We said this after the Florida State game, when you're constantly right. moving out to your arm side, the, you know, teams are going to game plan in a way in which you're not going to move out to your arm side.
Yeah. I think one way that good quarterbacks can get convinced of what we're talking about, stepping up in the pocket, staying patient, maybe hitting that second or third read if you have to after stepping up. Well, not only are you giving yourself a better chance to complete a pass by stepping up instead of bailing, but also, Travis, a lot of times your best rushing lane is mm-hmm. just going straight ahead inside to on either side of the center, as opposed to trying to hit the perimeter and beat somebody to the edge.
I agree wholeheartedly. Here's something else too. I thought Ryan Grubb did a good job, a better job probably than they did against Florida State, of giving Ty some layups too in the passing mm-hmm. game. You know, some of those right. quick game or even jets, and some of the stuff like the Jeremy Bernard that went for a touchdown, you know, those go down as completions and touchdown passes. So, it seemed like there were more of those type of opportunities, again, given the competition, but you would have liked to probably seen more of that quick game, things like that. We've been talking about and hoping kind of that would be more of a, have more of a place in the offense.
All right, let's touch on some of the skill guys offensively, Travis, before we move on to defense. We got a glimpse of AK Deer, the freshman running back, busted a big run, had a touchdown, 56 yarder. We saw, I thought, some really nice pass protection work from Richard Young, a couple nice plays from him in terms of keeping Simpson clean. And if I'm not mistaken, there were no quarterback hits on Simpson. I mean, you talk about a clean jersey. Really did a nice job of protecting him. And, of course, elsewhere with the pass catchers, another big game for Jeremy Bernard, the veteran transfer from Washington, who continues to play well week one, week two, and I don't think anybody doubts he'll be strong again in week three.
Yeah, given the familiarity with Jeremy Bernard, you know, Ryan Grubb came into this thing having no problem dialing him up, you know, at different times. But after Florida State, Ryan Grubb really has no problem getting Jeremy Bernard involved immediately in the game plan. And I think that's going to be the case even when Ryan Williams comes back, because, you know, and I've had some viewers here on the channel sort of speak to, well, Ryan Williams might be out of a job. No, Ryan Williams is going to be right back in that top three. There might be some guys who see their role shrink a little bit, but Ryan Williams is going to be in that top three. He just brings too much to the table. But boy, Bernard is, Jeremy Bernard right now through two games, if you were going to say who's the top football player on this team for you, would it be Jeremy Bernard? Would it be Parker Brailsford? Offensively, you know, which of those guys? And I think it would, given what we've seen from the defense, it would probably have to be one of those guys.
I think it's Bernard. I do. Yeah. He's just been rock solid. I could picture, you know, not against Wisconsin, but maybe a month from now, maybe 6 weeks from now, I could picture Alabama's best three receiver set being Williams and Bernard on the outside and Brooks in that slot role. And I know they played Ryan Williams a ton inside in that slot position against Florida State. They've been talking about Williams in the slot since the spring. So I'm not trying to kick him out of there. But he shouldn't be forgotten outside either.
No. And that's the thing. I think of Ryan Williams as an outside guy playing inside. Mm-hmm. And I'm all good with moving him around too. I play him inside, play him outside. You know, make it tough to sort of figure out where he's going to be on a snap-by-snap basis. But I agree. I said the same thing on Aftermath last night that, you know, I think Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard are slam dunk for the two. And it might be that last night was the start of ramping up LaSierre Brooks. So when you get Ryan Williams back, that's more of your three. And I think that's why it was important for Isaiah Horton to put some good stuff on tape last night. I know you've outlined, and we kind of go back and forth on this about what he brings to the table off the ball, but he did make some big plays in the passing game last night as a receiver.
Nice touchdown for Horton, no doubt about it, right there in the front corner of the end zone. I thought made a good adjustment on that ball. And you know, Rico Scott made a couple of good grabs. Cole Adams got involved, Travis. What about the Cole Adams punt return and the clothesline? That was pretty brutal, wasn't it?
Man, these Aussies, man. You know, they come with that, you know, Australian rules or that rugby background.
Yeah.
You got to have head on a swivel. You got to have that in your scout. You know, your special teams coach has got to let you know, hey, they got an Aussie that played rugby. So just know if it's you and him, you better be ready to go. But no, I thought it was a great night for Cole Adams. I thought he once again showed that he makes punt returns look pretty easy. He made some great catches just on some of the returns with the situations that he had.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thrown at him. And then he has a feel for it. You know, he just feels like one of those guys that can multitask when the ball's in the air, and very few folks can do that. Maybe even drop his eyes down to get a look and then still make the catch and kind of know where he wants to go with the returns,
right?
Or just where he's at on the field too, an awareness, an intuition of where he's at relative to the rest of the traffic. So good to see him get in the end zone too. Good to see the reaction from his teammates when he got in the end zone too, right?
No doubt. Caleb Edwards at tight end, seeing a good bit of him, Travis. He pulled in a touchdown catch as well. It's going to be fun to watch how this tight end group evolves. Quavis, obviously, the number one. I think by end of year, if we're not already seeing Edwards kind of evolve into that number two tight end in that room, I think it's definitely heading in that direction.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think it was maybe a little bit of a surprise to see him out there as early as we saw him at Florida State, but he's kind of backed that up now as the co-starter and 12 personnel. If they go with that to go along with Quavis. So boy, a lot of upside for this young tight end. And it's pretty interesting because, as we talked about, they didn't leave many stones unturned in terms of the portal. I think we saw Brody Dalton last night, the Troy transfer, some too. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of guys that they can roll out there. I noticed that Danny Lewis wasn't dressed, I guess, for the game, but Jay Lindsey, I think, has been kind of the third tight end that they've run out there, right?
Yeah, Jay Lindsey saw some action. We saw a little Marshall Pritchett late in the game, the freshman who went out in the spring with an injury. He's back. He made a couple of grabs. I think he had another target that he wasn't able to come up with, but a lot of tight ends getting on the field for sure. And this offense averaging, Travis, 45 a game now.
Everything is fine.
Yeah.
I don't think Bama fans are buying that. And by the way, I know we'll get into Wisconsin later in the week, but Wisconsin, I think problematic for the Badgers is going to be scoring points, but they've been pretty good defensively now. Played a couple of whatever teams to this point, so we'll really find out this week. But the tight end situation, there's no shortage of options.
They'll be physical. Wisconsin will bring that to the party.
Yeah, Bucky is gonna bring the physicality as best as it can.
Defense has been stout for Wisconsin through two games. As you mentioned, they haven't exactly beaten the Dallas Cowboys yet, but the defense has been really strong for the Badgers here through the early part of September. Defensively, Travis, let's jump over to that side of the ball. So many guys getting on the field. It was unbelievable. Ford, your leading tackler for the night, only had four stops. Does that tell you all you need to know about how many guys got to play?
Yeah, that's part of the feel-good aspect of this thing too, man, when you can play that many guys. But I thought it was very encouraging because the further they went down the depth chart, it seemed like, if anything, the ferocity maybe ramped up. Dre Kirkpatrick Jr. bringing the hit stick a couple of times. QB Reese getting a hand in on a couple of takeaways. That was good stuff. I like Steve Bumwa.
Yes.
He doesn't, you know, Joe Kynes used to have a great saying when you'd ask him about young players, and he would say, well, he don't know heel from sickum yet, but he's going to be all right. You know,
yeah,
in other words,
yeah,
he really doesn't know what's going on, but
yeah,
you know, when he does something, he does it. And that was Steve, yeah, you know, Steve, and watch Steve next time he's out there. One thing that dude has is some C4 in his hands. Uh-huh. Because when he shoots his hands, they're impactful. And he ran to the football, and he was around the football on pretty much every snap he was out. I think he had 3 tackles, including 1 for loss, in right, very limited reps. And I understand it's ULM, it's late, but, you know, kind of still waiting on some guys, right?
No doubt.
On this defensive line.
Absolutely. James Smith, speaking of guys people are looking for on that defensive line, had 3 tackles for loss in this one, Travis. 4 solo tackles, 3 of them in the backfield. So some nice work from him. Sacks, I guess they came up empty. ULM, though, they were getting rid of it quick, obviously, when they did throw. They didn't have the ball that much. They weren't able to convert a lot of first downs. So I don't know how much stock you put into that, but you know, you mentioned Dre Kirkpatrick. I guess Dre Kirk will sit, right, for a half first against Whiskey on that targeting call.
Yeah, and that's a special teams thing more than anything. But, again, you know, you don't like to lose a player for a half for the next week. But if the rest of your team is going to get to see someone on the defensive side of the ball bring the lumber a couple of times,
mm-hmm,
I don't think that's the worst visual that this Alabama defense can get right now. And, you know, I thought there were some interesting situations on defense. I saw some 3-4, right? I mean, Justin Hill came on to the field, Quay Roussel at the other edge or outside linebacker, 2 inside linebackers and a 4-man secondary. I don't recall seeing that to this point under Kane Womack. I saw dime. I mean, we saw some dime. Bray Hubbard was kind of in that money role that we had seen in the Nick Saban era. I don't recall. We've talked about that on multiple occasions around here. It really isn't a dime for Kane. So I think in some ways it's good that they're obviously considering some other concepts. But then the other part of it's like, wow, is this guy already second guessing what he really believed in when he, when he took the job? So, you know, there's, I guess, a couple of different ways to look at that. We really won't know. I guess we'll find out a little bit more against Wisconsin. Wisconsin's got a quarterback issue, so who knows? But then, of course, when you go to Georgia in a couple, 3 weeks, you'll definitely find out.
One thing defensively that stood out to me just a little bit, Travis, was when I looked at snap counts, only 11 snaps for Nakai Hill-Green, the linebacker, who's said to be one of kind of the top 3 guys working around between Lawson and Justin Jefferson. In a game like this where the subbing is so fast and furious and the subs are coming in so early, I don't want to overread into that, but that did catch my eye. A lot of guys played more than Nakai Hill-Green.
Yeah, that's always been sort of an interesting addition. And it's not because I don't think he can't, you know, add something from a depth perspective. But, you know, and I know based on his skill set and kind of his measurables, there's going to be some limitations for him within a defensive scheme in a league like the Southeastern Conference. In other words, you know, he's kind of retro backer a little bit. Mm-hmm. And even on first down anymore, you can't count on getting, you know, 12 or 13 personnel. And here comes the
dive,
the run play.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that is a little low for ULM, but he could also be in that sort of in-between place too, right? When the starters are in the game, he's going to be that's going to be his spot to sort of play and see some snaps. And then when they go wholesale to Reese and Caden and guys like that with that sort of 2-3 group, he doesn't really fit into that rotation. I'm, you know, that's kind of the way I'm going to view that for the foreseeable future. But I thought the young linebackers showed some good things, so that was a positive too.
For the style that he has, that you noted, he's kind of an old school downhill linebacker.
Yep.
I would think that this upcoming stretch, Wisconsin, Georgia, Vanderbilt, that ought to be where he gets the most action, right? Not the least.
I worry about playing him with Justin Jefferson, I guess, because mm-hmm. I worry more about potential for busts in situations like that. In other words, what I could see Wisconsin doing is trying to throw it to the backs or quick right. game. And by the way, Wisconsin against Middle Tennessee last night ran two reverse end arounds for touchdowns.
Ugh.
So guess what you'll see on the perimeter, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, it'll be out there.
On Saturday from Whiskey. Yeah, I think you're going to see that probably just about every week moving forward. But I know a lot of folks are still look at Deontay and don't think he's there or, you know, where he needs to be. But I think as much as anything, it's a trust thing too, with, you know, having Deontay out there with Justin Jefferson, who, by the way, good for Justin. He had one of those three takeaways, made a nice play on the interception. And, you know, hopefully he finds his footing, finds his legs a little bit and is able to just play because he's got the physical attributes you want at that position.
First takeaway of the season for the Alabama defense, that Justin Jefferson interception. You know, Kane Womack's looking for a lot more of that. They want all the turnovers they can get. He established that last year with a defense that really piled up the interceptions last season. So you know Kane Womack likes him some picks. All right, the Talkin' Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Smash that like button. Smash that subscribe button. And give Ryer on YouTube a follow. Want to ask you to support Parker Covers Alabama at parkercoversalabama.com. It's a new charity that myself and John Copeland have launched in honor of Mike Parker, who's was both a friend of mine and Travis's, of course, in a wheelchair for 20 plus years. Parker Covers Alabama is going to help Alabama wheelchaired residents. Again, parkercoversalabama.com. If you would like to donate, this is the Talkin' Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis, closing thoughts here before we shut it down. Anything else about this Alabama ULM game stand out to you that's worthy of mention?
Well, you know, I'm going to give specialists some love, right? And I know we talked about Cole Adams, who
sure
definitely would have been your special teams MVP from Saturday night from the Alabama side of things. But give Connor Talty some credit for that field goal there. After he had made it from about 47 from the middle of the field, they go to review for the previous play and end up ruling it, I guess, a catch. Mm-hmm. So he basically has to kick it again from 45, 46 from the left hash mark. And hey, drilled it. So good to see Connor Talty in Bryant-Denny Stadium, by the way, where Kalen DeBoer had told us he had had some struggles, Connor Talty, kicking in the stadium. Guy, Alabama used what, three kickers in the game? So I think Tom Hart.
A lot of room to spare on that mate, too, as I recall.
Yeah, it was. He's got plenty, man. He's got plenty of pop. Tom Hart on the broadcast kept trying to get Blake Dowd in the game because he was referring to Connor Talty as, I think, Blake Talty. So it was a little bit of a hybrid.
Right.
But good for Connor Talty. Boy, around the SEC, pretty interesting. Pretty interesting day, right? And those Florida Gators, boy, they can't get right Gators.
No, they can't. No. What about the spitting incident, Travis, that kicked off that USF game-winning drive, a free 15 yards, gave them a first and 10, I think, on their own 39 to really kind of kickstart that drive. And, boy, I saw a little video clip of fans leaving the bowels of Ben Hill Griffin chanting, "Fire Billy," right?
Yeah, boy, that was just a total setback. After the five-game winning streak to end last season, all the good juju with DJ Lagway and everything that this team was going to be capable of. And who knows? Because we've seen Alabama teams in the past with coaching situations kind of like this one.
Yeah.
And USF, we shouldn't undervalue them in September. USF is a different team, as Alabama has found out in the past. Yeah. in September than they are by the time attrition and the run of a season takes effect in November. All that being said, that took me back to about 99 Alabama football. And I'm just saying, I won't be surprised if, like 99 Alabama football, Florida goes on the road this week and beats LSU after what happened. Because they still had the people to do it. Now, I don't think Caleb Banks, the defensive lineman, played for Florida. But, boy, Napier can't get out of his own way. He's got Lagway throwing flat routes up with about 3 minutes to go. He's got the ball out near midfield. And on first down, he's got Lagway throwing the ball in the flat and stopping the running clock with an incompletion.
South Florida's no joke either. I might have recommended South Florida plus the 17.5. Came in like a charm. Came in easy.
South Florida in September is a different deal. And Byron Brown, Alabama's seen that guy at the quarterback position. He can be a lot. And so we'll see about the Gators moving forward. What about
Vanderbilt?
You talk about a tough pill to swallow for a program like Virginia Tech, because they had that game seemingly in command and then just got ran out of their own stadium, got ran out of Lane Stadium.
Vanderbilt outscored the Hokies in the second half, Travis, 35-0.
I know. I mean, Frank Beamer rolling in his grave, and he's not even in one yet. I mean, it was brutal. That was absolutely brutal. But Diego, you take that cat just about anywhere, you're gonna have to knock that dude out.
And, speaking of Frank Beamer, doesn't Vanderbilt get his kid next? Isn't it Vandy, South Carolina upcoming? Is that right?
It could be, you know.
I'll double check that real quick.
It could be. It's at that. We're getting into the meat, some more meat with the Southeastern Conference. I didn't think Kentucky would be very competitive against Ole Miss. And guess what? The man in Vegas had that one at 8.5. And guess who kicked the field goal late to make it 7? The home dogs with the sharp teeth.
Did you catch Lane in the post game? He said, right, the post-game interview right on the field, he goes, sorry to all the gamblers.
Including myself, probably. Gee, Lane, it's funny you knew the number like you did.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I didn't see that. Good Oklahoma. I don't know. I'm not ready to say Oklahoma's back. But nice win over Michigan.
Yeah, Vanderbilt on the road at South Carolina, SEC Network 6:45 kick this coming Saturday.
That'll be a damn good football game.
Yeah, and but you mentioned Oklahoma. What about that game taking Michigan down the way they did?
Yeah, I mean the payroll went up in the offseason at Oklahoma with the new offensive coordinator and his quarterback John Mateer coming down from Washington State, and I'd say it's paid off. And the Oklahoma defense played well. More along the lines of what you would expect from Brent Venables. So I thought Missouri was impressive, showed some real chin in a great game against Kansas. Boy, just multiple fourth down conversions for Eli Drinkwitz's team in that one. A couple of them for touchdowns on fourth down. And I don't know if you saw this, Emmanuel Henderson, the former Alabama wide receiver, he had a chance to make a big grab late in that game for KU, and it went off of his hands.
Missed that. Yeah. Missed that. Yep. Did not catch that.
Kendrick Law still running jet sweeps. I don't know if you saw that. Just running them for Kentucky now.
I think I did see one of those. They're going to like him there. He's a Stoops kind of player.
He is. I mean, he will bring physicality for sure to that room. No doubt about it. I think I've said this before. Jalen Mbakwe is the new Kendrick Law in the offense. And you saw it against ULM, getting him some jet sweeps. And he's not the blocker yet, though, that Kendrick was.
Lastly, Travis, last game we'll touch on around the league. What about those Mississippi State Bulldogs taking down Arizona State 24-20? A definite upset there. I got a sister who works in the athletic department out at ASU now and a part of that creative design team. And she was not happy about this outcome.
The beer in Tempe was not cold. as an old friend of ours used to say after that, especially when you give up a 58-yard touchdown pass with 30 seconds to go to lose.
Yeah. How does that happen?
As that was rough. But, hey, good for Jeff Lebby, Blake Shapen, that fan base, because, boy, last year was just week to week misery. Not just getting beat most weeks, but, I mean, pounded. Mm-hmm. And I think Coleman Hutzler is the DC now at Mississippi State, and they've made some strides. I wondered if he was going to make it a year or two. They were so bad last year, but did a nice job against Kenny Dillingham and that ASU offense in Stark Vegas Saturday night.
All right, that'll wrap us up here on the Talking Tide podcast. For Travis Ryer, I am Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. Be sure to check back in with us midweek when we break down that Alabama-Wisconsin game coming up, Bryant-Denny Stadium, on Saturday night. We'll see you then.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,